Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Are you puzzled by bank fees? Should you buy or lease a car? Is it a good idea to pay off your mortgage? And when should you start collecting Social Security? Should it be at 65 or at 62? Well, we're going to have some answers for you today. My guest is Janet Bodner. She's the editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. And we're going to discuss these issues and a whole lot more. Janet, it's so nice to see you again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, Shirley.
Now, these are really subjects that are on the minds of consumers. And you decided to do this, these stories in your issue. You call it Do This, Not That.
Right.
And this is because it was generated by consumers' request to you all?
You got it. We get so many questions, Shirley, which I would consider like priority questions or hierarchy questions. Should I do this or that? Should I save or pay off debt? Should I save for retirement or save for college? The ones that you just mentioned, which we're going to discuss. Should I buy or lease a car? So we thought we're going to do a cover story where we bring together as many as we possibly can and cut to the chase. We have done lengthy stories at Kiplinger's on all of these issues. But in this particular issue, which is our September cover story, we're and it's also on Kiplinger.com, so you can get all the gory details that you want and more. We thought we're going to cut to the chase, and we're going to give people the answers as best as we can distill them.
Well, you know, I think that's such a wise choice because so many of us don't want to read things that are too long anymore.
I know.
The attention span is...
Oh, man, yeah.
So consequently, I think it's a brilliant idea, and I'm delighted that we're going to talk about these things. So let's go back and talk about this issue of buying or leasing a car. Now, a lot of people I know come along and they think, well, what do I want to do? What are the pros and cons? What do I need to know about it? How did you all come down on this issue?
Well, cutting to the chase, the do this, the buy the car part, if you keep your car, first of all, if you're paying cash for the car, that's number one. Secondly, if you tend to keep your car until it dies, you just literally run it into the ground. You even if you're taking out a loan, you keep it far past the time when the loan is paid off. You put a lot of miles on your car, then you are really a candidate for just buying the vehicle. Just go ahead and buy the vehicle.
Like me, I'm driving an 11-year-old car. If I get one that works, I want to keep it.
We have a minivan that just hit 150,000 miles on the buttons. So again, we fall into the buy the car category.
So those parameters are guidelines for you to sit down and evaluate your use, your retention of cars, figure out what's the best thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you do, if you're leasing a car, you do have to understand that there are certain restrictions on you in terms of you may have, can you end the lease when you want to? Because you're signing a contract.
Right, exactly. Now, the pros of the sort of the do that part of this, lease the car, if you're the type of person who always has a car payment because you're always trading in your car, you always want to have the latest wheels, then a lease could make sense for you. It's interesting that the lease payment could conceivably be lower than a car payment, and you might be able to get a fancier car if that is your wish. You are right, though, that it is a contract, so you are locked in. Now, there are websites online because, of course, there are websites for everything. One is called leasetrader.com. Another one is called swapalease.com, which will let you get out of the lease if that is your preference, if you really want to get out of the lease early. But you may not want to. If you are a chronic leaser, you know, this is just the way you roll, so to speak, with your car, you may want to just, finish out the lease and then perhaps lease another car.
Yeah.
So anyway, again, it's very important. One of the bottom lines is that you really do need to know the contracts and know the terms of the relationship you're getting into.
Mm-hmm. Because it is, you say, it is a contract.
Right, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're hearing from consumers at Call for Action who are really irate over the fact that many of the things that they took for granted with their banks that were free, quote, in quotes,
right,
are no longer free. There's a charge attached to them. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Oh, Oh, so many things, Shirley. You know, one thing I got to say, banks and airlines probably have the worst customer service relations of any businesses going. And I wish they would sort of take a lesson here in how to smooth the ruffled feathers of their customers. But be that as it may, customers have to realize that there are a lot of changes going on, and the changes have unintended consequences. In the banking industry, they are often classic and unintended, unexpected, and not very welcome. And the fee thing is a perfect example. What's happening is we've had a lot of consumer-oriented legislation, which was designed to help out with the penalties that, you know, people were complaining about if they were doing things like going over their limit on their credit card or they were late with payments. They overdrew their checking accounts with overdraft fees. That was really a huge one. They were really upset about having to pay these egregious fees, which in many cases they were. Well, now the banks have been ordered by law in many cases to cut back on those fees, but they still have to cover the cost of doing business. And so what they're doing is they're initiating new fees on all of us. So it's not just the people who were misbehaving who now have to pay the fees. We all have to pay the fees for these services. We have a really interesting statistic in the September issue of Kiplinger that the average checking account actually costs banks money. They are losing money on the average checking account.
Well, there's no interest that's being paid on money anymore.
Well, that's true. But we say, this is an interesting statistic. Banks now lose an average of $174 per year on each checking account.
Wow.
Because, you know, they were offering free checking accounts, and the free, quote, free checking accounts were being subsidized by some of the other fees that they were charging in other areas. Now they're not allowed to charge those fees, or they're limited in the amount of money that they can charge. So they're moving into other areas to charge fees.
So we can blame a lot of this on legislation that had one goal and ended up doing some other things to us that were not even considered.
Actually, Shirley, that's a very good way of putting it. And it was not considered at the time. And it's just going to get worse because of other legislation that's still in the pipeline. I mean, we're seeing this, the big issue over the summer were the debit card swipe fees. People may not be aware of it, but every time they make a purchase with debit cards, the merchant is charged a fee by the banks for processing that transaction. And the merchants didn't like the fees that they were paying. They thought that they were too high. So they lobbied Congress for legislation to lower the fees. The fees will be lowered starting October 1st, and the merchants are very happy about this. But again, those fees were being used, say the banks, to subsidize checking accounts, to pay for anti-fraud protections. So what's going to happen is, you've already seen this, debit card rewards programs have been cut back. Banks are talking about potentially charging fees for debit cards. And what they're doing is increasing other fees because they're getting their fee income from the swipe fees is going to be considerably reduced. So they've got to make it up somewhere.
And if you're like me, I don't use a debit card, but I'm still going to end up for people who use debit cards because I'm going to bear the cost.
Oh, probably. Yes. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's just take, there's so much to talk about. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Janet Bodner. She's the editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, and we're honored to have her, old friend, interviewed many times before, so it's delightful to see her again. Let's talk about mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
All right, since we've beaten up on bank fees and whatnot. I think one of the big questions for consumers now is, should I refinance? Mm-hmm. Should I pay off my mortgage? What should I do? Or should I just continue it? Well, of course, if you can refinance without a lot of penalties, it's probably a good idea right now, depending on what you're currently mm-hmm. paying. But what about paying off a mortgage? I mean, then you don't have any interest to pay on it.
That's right.
What are the parameters consumers should use to make that decision?
Well, let me say one thing about the whole issue. This was a hot topic. We have an editor's meeting every week, and this was a huge topic at our editor's meeting this week. Half the people there were refinancing their mortgage, and some people had actually paid it off already. So the interest rates, that's the one good thing, I guess. If you're a borrower, interest rates are very low. So as long as you have good credit, it's a good time to refinance. Now, the question, do they do this or that? Do pay off your mortgage, especially if you're close to retirement. You don't have a lot left on the mortgage. You want to go into retirement without this burden. Plus, and here's a critical thing, if you have the cash to do it, not everyone does, and we don't want you to deplete your retirement accounts in order to pay off the mortgage. We really think that that money has to continue to grow. But if it's something that you, if you've got cash in the bank that's earning zero,
yeah, that's
you might as
right.
well pay off the mortgage, you know, and get that monkey off your back, and you'll feel really quite good about it. Now, if you're younger, if you, you're not having any trouble making your mortgage payments, you like getting the mortgage interest deduction and as long as it lasts, you know, and that's a good thing for you, you would want to continue to pay off the mortgage. But you can do what the people on our staff were talking about. You can always refinance, not just to a lower rate, and we're talking in the 3% range. The people around our table the other day were under 4%. That's
it's
the rate that they were getting. Yes.
It's really astonishing how low you can get
That's
rates.
Right.
Yeah.
But the, and the good thing is you can refinance to say what the people at work were doing was they were refinancing to 10-year mortgages, 15-year mm-hmm. mortgages. So they were either still saving money because the difference in their interest rate was so great, or perhaps their interest payment was similar, or their monthly payment, I should say, was similar, but they were going to pay off the loan a lot faster.
Oh, yeah.
So
that means that you're paying more in principal every time
right.
you pay and not interest.
That's
so
right, yeah.
That's a winner
exactly.
for the consumer. Yeah.
So I would definitely say to look into this, especially, you know, if you've got good credit, which nowadays, you know, that's a thing. You cannot always get, even though rates are low, you can't always get the rates unless you have pretty stellar credit. But, you know, it's worth a try, certainly
yeah.
for people who do have good credit, and even for people who maybe, you know, you can always improve your credit rating over the course of 6 months or a year.
Well, I think it's certainly something to consider.
Definitely.
You know, and look at the pros and cons of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to save a considerable sum of money, I mean, to me is... You know, mm-hmm. and it doesn't even have to be thousands. Let's just, you know, make it modest amounts.
One of the editors who was discussing this at work the other day is going to save $350 a month on his refi. That's amazing.
That's astonishing.
I know. That's just
yes.
a huge amount of money.
Yes.
So,
and you know, people who've had a mortgage for a while and probably got it at a much higher rate.
Bingo.
They should really be looking at it because
right.
they're paying a ton of money and they don't really need to do that.
Right. Some people, of course, have been in on this. They're serial refinancers, right? And they've been refinancing every time as interest rates have gone down. But some people, you know, inertia sets in. You just don't have the time or you don't take the time or the effort to make the effort to refinance. If you haven't done it and you're sitting on a 5 or even 6% loan, I mean, imagine, you know, how much you can save.
Well, you know, I've seen friends, and I have someone in my office who just refinanced, and he's saving a couple $300 a month also.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing because when he bought his house, the rates were considerably higher. He hasn't had it that long. He planned. One of the other things I think to consider is, are you going to stay in the house?
Exactly.
Are you going to be there for a while?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are, then it definitely is going to pay you to refinance if you can get a better rate.
Mm-hmm. It also depends on if there are fees involved in the refinancing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, actually, the guy that I work with, he's actually rolling his closing costs into the refinanced mortgage, and he's still paying less because of the difference
in the
interest rate. But mm-hmm. again, you know, if there are going to be fees, you're either going to have to roll them into the loan or pay them up front. And how long are you going to be in the house, and will you be
yeah.
able to recoup them if
yeah.
you do have to pay them?
There are a lot of things to consider.
Right.
There, but oftentimes it's a really
good
decision.
Oh, yeah, especially with rates where they are now.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. All right. Now, one of the questions is, how do people use their money? Are they saving it for retirement? Are they going to put their money in a retirement account? Or should people who have children, for example, be putting money into an account for their children for college? What's the parameters that you should use in something like this?
Well, I think that, again, in our Do This, Do or That cover story, we're trying to sort of focus things. And what we've told people is, if you are within, say, 20 years of retirement, you need to focus all your efforts on retirement. This is assuming that you don't feel like you're, you know, totally 100% there yet. As is often said, there are other ways to pay for college. You can switch around where your kids go to college, you go to a less expensive school. You can pay out of current income. There's financial aid. Even smart student borrowing can be helpful. But you cannot do this for retirement. Your retirement is going to be on your shoulders probably, or at least a great deal of it's going to be on your shoulders. So you should really, if you're within that 20-year range, focus all your efforts on paying for retirement. Again, if you don't do that and you divert too much to the college saving, you also miss out on some of the tax breaks that you get if you put money aside in retirement accounts. Now, let's say you're set. You already have a pension, an old-fashioned traditional pension coming.
One of those.
Some people still have them. And in fact, maybe, and this is often true in the Washington, D.C. area, people may have federal pensions and they take their federal pensions and they start a second career. So at midlife or a little bit past midlife, they're very confident of their retirement future. And if that's the case, you can divert, obviously, more money toward saving for college. I would also say that if you are younger, if you're just starting out and you've got little kids, you know, and so you're not within 20 years of retirement, you can do a little bit of both. I would always focus more on the retirement, on the saving for retirement, because this is your money. You really have to, it may sound selfish if you're a parent, but you have to, you know, look out for number one, and you really are number one.
And there are jobs for kids.
Right, exactly. And the kids, you know, the kids can contribute to their own college education. So don't feel obliged to put your own finances at risk to pay, you know, $50,000 or more a year for them for college. So, but you know, you do have enough time if you're young to take advantage of college savings account, you know, 529 college savings account and that sort of thing. So I would always put the emphasis on retirement, but when you're younger, you have a little more leeway to divide up that pot of savings.
So it's really a life plan
it
that
is.
You need to
exactly.
establish here and figuring out where you're going, how you hope to get there, and what you're going to need down the road. So there are a lot of things to consider. You know, it really is a complicated subject.
Of course. That's why we write about it every month and try to simplify it as much as possible.
You do a great job. Let's just take a brief pause here to let people know that they're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Janet Bodner. She's the editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. And we're talking about the daily issues that confront us, the decisions we have to make, and how do we know what's right and what's wrong. And of course, as we're learning, a lot of it depends on us and our own situations. But also, there are some guidelines for many of these things. Now, one of the big questions I think people are facing is this aging population is when should they start collecting Social Security benefits? Now, you have a choice now of doing it at 62 with somewhat reduced payments, or doing it at 65 with greater payments. How do you decide?
Oh, Shirley, this is such a hot button topic. We hear so much from readers, and readers of all ages too, not just people who are nearing retirement, but people who are younger and wondering, you know, if Social Security is going to be there. In our This or That cover story, Kiplinger's as a whole we have a very strong opinion on this, and we've written considerably again about longer pieces at Kiplinger.com. But if you cut to the chase here, we say take most people, and your audience might be interested to know this. Most people, in fact, do take Social Security at age 62. As soon as they're eligible for it, they take it for any number of reasons, much of which is, hey, I've paid for it all my life. I'm going to take it. Right? I want to make sure I get it. But what we say is that, and that is true, if you really need the money, you know, you're going to retire early, perhaps you just cannot work any longer, take the money. But as you just pointed out, if you take the money at 62, your benefits are going to be reduced. Plus, if you can want to continue to work, your benefits are going to be cut back if you earn more than $14,000 in your other work. So if you want to maintain a part-time job, you know, that is really something to consider. We think, bottom line, if you can possibly do it, wait until 66, your normal retirement age. You are going to get a bigger benefit at that age. And one of the big concerns that people have nowadays is not just whether they're going to get their Social Security, but what is their income? Are they going to have enough income in retirement to last a fairly long retirement? So as a result of that, you want to maximize your income as much as you can. And waiting until 66 allows you to maximize your income. And it also gives you, we didn't get into it in this particular story, but we've gotten into it in great length at Kiplinger.com and in other issues. You have a lot of social social, if you are married, you have a lot of strategies for taking your Social Security at different ages, maximizing your benefits, if there are going to be spousal benefits and survivor benefits that you really want to look into. And if you wait until, again, if you wait until you're 66, you just have more opportunity to maximize your retirement income.
You know, I had completely forgotten that it was changed to 66.
Right. Well, you know, we do the same thing. 65, I think people tend to think of that as retirement
age.
It's close. But, you know, if for people who are, most people who are baby boomers, you're talking about roughly age 66.
Well, with longer lives, I'm sure that's a factor.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, because you're looking at collecting more money for a longer period of time.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And hoping that we can pay for all that.
Right, which is one of the problems with the whole Social Security system. It was never designed to pay for people who were going to quit at age 62 or 65 and then live another 30 years.
Right.
I mean, you know,
right.
at the time, back in the 1930s when the system started, the life expectancy was actually lower than the retirement age. And so they figured, oh, well, this could work, actuarially. But nowadays it's more difficult.
It's not working.
Right.
No, it isn't working. All right. One other. We just have a few minutes here. And I think this is one that confronts people quite often. You're making a major purchase,
right?
Whether it's a car or it's a major appliance for your house. How do you decide whether or not you should pay cash for it or finance it?
Interesting question. And really, the times have had an effect on this. It really does make sense to pay cash, assuming you've got the money, certainly for any sort of depreciable asset. Now, you know, a car is a depreciable asset. A computer is a depreciable asset. An appliance is a depreciable asset. And in the olden days, we used to say, you know, you have to consider the opportunity cost. Let's say you do have, this is assuming, of course, that you've got the cash in the bank, or you have the cash and you can invest it in some other way. You always had to consider what else you could do with the cash and what you could do if you took the money. You know, the alternative would be to keep the money in the bank. How much were you losing by taking the money out of the bank? Well, nowadays, you're losing nothing by taking the money out of the bank because you're getting paid nothing. So paying cash actually does make more sense even from a financial point of view. Now, the question people will immediately say is, well, I don't have the cash to buy a car. I don't have the cash to buy even a new washer. Perhaps your washer, you know, dies and you need to buy something new. Well, all right, if you're going to go out and borrow the money, it means you have to, as you pointed out before, have a plan. You want to pay it off. It is a depreciating asset, so you want to get the best deal you can. You want to pay the lowest interest rate you can, and you want to pay off the loan as quickly as you can. And you want to make sure that it's a necessity. And this is what a lot of people are doing. They're cutting back on their discretionary expenses because they perhaps do not have the cash or don't feel comfortable parting with the cash. They want to keep it in their emergency fund and they don't want to get into debt. And that's what you're seeing, why consumer purchases, mm-hmm. other than necessities, are, you know, consumers are very leery about spending their money.
I think people are very anxious. It's a very tense time in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're all worried about what's going to be happening and what's going to happen to the economy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We only have a minute. Got anything else that we need to toss out at our listeners?
Oh, geez.
We need a lot more than a minute.
Well, you know, as I said, what we do every month at Kiplinger's is no matter, and I got this question earlier this week, no matter what goes on in the economy, no matter what goes on in Washington, no matter what goes on in Wall Street, we're trying to keep people up to date on what they need to know. One of the big issues for our readers, two things our readers are very concerned about right now. A, saving money. We cannot write enough stories about getting value for the money that you spend. They want to know where the best deals are, and we write a lot about that. And as far as investing is concerned, income and dividends, because they're getting zero interest on the money that they have in the bank. Treasuries are not paying much more than zero. CDs are not paying much more. I mean, 1 or 2%, if you can get it on a 5-year CD, is terrific. So people want to know where they can go for income. And, of course, the farther out you go to get reward, the riskier it's going to be. So mm-hmm. this is not going to be sleep-tight money. So you really have to know, as you said earlier, what your plan is, what you feel comfortable with. But we try to keep people up to date on that.
And the address is Kiplinger.com.
It's Kiplinger.com.
Janet, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Janet Bodner, editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. And we have talked about so many issues that are so important to consumers because we're all concerned about our money and what's the wisest choices for us. Anyway, we're glad you were with us. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.